From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, filmmaker Joshua Marston's movie about blood feuds in Albania sparks a feud of its own. It was disqualified as an Oscar contender for Best Foreign Language Film. Marston tells us his side of the story. Plus, behind the scenes on producing the Independent Spirit Awards. But first, the Hollywood News banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, This Means War is about to open in theaters. It has not been kindly received by those who have seen it so far. The expectations are not high. And maybe that explains why Chris Pine, one of the stars of the film, who was, you may know, from the Star Trek reboot, fired his agents in November or not. But those agents have now turned around and sued him.
I think they were upset not so much by the way in which they were let go, which was in an email, not in a phone call or a conversation, the way maybe some grown-up people would have handled it, but the fact that he was walking away with a lot of potential commissions. And there's two interesting things about this lawsuit, and it's not extraordinary, but what it did reveal is, A, that Chris Pine stands to make a lot of money on some of his future projects, and B, that typically, and this happens a lot, some small agency will develop an actor's career, maybe it's a director's career, maybe it's the screenwriters, and a larger agent will see that person and come in and make big promises of what they could do for them. Now, Chris Pine has not signed with another agency yet, but it very often happens that small agencies break somebody's career and then they lose them. And it's sad, but it's just the kind of the nature of the business.
This agency was called SDB Partners. I certainly can't tell you that I have ever heard of them. They're a small agency in Century City. But they had been with Chris Pine for 9 years when, according to their allegations, he was untouchable, to now where he is getting allegedly more than $1 million to have been in Star Trek, $3 million for Unstoppable, and then the Jack Ryan franchise that he is supposed to star in, which is a, you know, a reinvention. Three movies, $4 million and $8 million and $12 million, respectively, if they so escalating if they work. That's a lot of money not to get commissioned on.
No, a little bit. It's like a marriage. I mean, if you in California under community property law, if you get somebody's career going in the marriage, you know, what they earn is part of your divorce settlement. I think it's in many ways they're looking at Chris Pine's career as a marriage that blew up badly and they want their fair share. This probably won't be litigated to trial, but it's a little interesting in terms of what it revealed about his compensation and the way in which he handled his exit from this agency.
Meanwhile, we've had a lot of earnings reports from big Hollywood companies. One of them is Comcast, which owns NBC and USA Network and a lot of cable channels, as well as Universal Pictures. You know, CEO Brian Roberts is saying that they have integrated NBC Universal, the company that they acquired last year, Comcast, of course, a giant cable company, that they continue to make progress. But boy, turning around NBC, they are not exactly celebrating that one yet.
No, and I think they have a lot of work to do at Universal Pictures as well. It hits on some themes that we've talked about repeatedly on the show. A lot of their growth and income comes from cable television. USA, Sci-Fi, Bravo, MSNBC, where revenue was up to $2.2 billion, and also their internet and their video business, which is doing very well. So those are the good, healthy businesses. But you look at NBC and you look at Universal Studios, where they said, quote, "Our film business has not been doing well, but we have a very strong slate in 2012. And I have to say, Universal under Comcast is putting a lot more money on the table this year. They had a big opening with Safe House with Denzel Washington, and they have three movies whose budgets are all around $200 million coming up later this year: Battleship, 47 Ronin, and Snow White and the Huntsman. And NBC, we should say, posted an $80 million loss for Comcast.
Speaking of losing, there another loser in the cable business, not a Comcast property, not part of NBC Universal, a Discovery. effort. Now, we've talked about how the Oprah Winfrey Network has truly struggled and hemorrhaged money. She is finally focused her full attention on this thing. I mean, maybe a little bit too much attention. What do you think, John?
Well, I mean, what she did first of all, Oprah has 9 million Twitter followers.
she could get those people to watch her channel.
She'd be in great shape. She instructed them, everyone, and I'm quoting now from a tweet she sent, everyone who can please turn to own, especially if you have a Nielsen box. She misspelled Nielsen, but that was not the big transgression. Nielsen has very specific rules preventing the encouragement of Nielsen households to watch a specific show.
Yeah, so Oprah withdrew this and said she had removed the tweet at the request of Nielsen. I intended no harm and apologize for the reference, and an asterisk will be attached to OWN's ratings at the time that the message was sent, noting, quote, a possible biasing effect, close quote.
Yeah, I don't know what the biasing effect is on zero, which are basically where her ratings are. But I guess without the asterisk, it would be negative ratings.
And I should just note for people who listened to the show last week, Bill Lawrence, the creator of Cougar Town, the co-creator of Cougar Town, the show was about his effort to tweet and have parties and promote the return of his show, which had been off the air on ABC for 9 months, to get them back. And the ratings came in, and John, they were not good.
They were in Oprah territory.
And certainly, I think Bill Lawrence would blame the system, the Nielsen system, which relies on roughly 25,000 households across the U.S. to set the ratings, those 25,000 households that Oprah was trying to reach. And I think we can agree that in this day and age, relying on 25,000 households to decide if a show is a hit or a miss, it just seems sort of absurd, doesn't it?
Tell that to the Iowa caucuses.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That was John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Coming up later in the show, what goes into producing the Independent Spirit Awards show? On the beach, under a tent, where whiskey flows like water. But first, filmmaker Joshua Marston's losing Oscar battle. A couple of weeks ago, we aired a debate over the Motion Picture Academy's system for choosing films eligible to compete for an Oscar in the foreign language category. My colleague at The Hollywood Reporter, Stephen Galloway, has issues with what he calls the Academy's lousy foreign film policy. So we set a debate between Galloway and Mark Johnson, the head of the selection committee in that category. Galloway cited a number of movies that he felt deserved recognition but were deemed ineligible to compete. One film that he singled out was Forgiveness of Blood, written and directed by Joshua Marston. Forgiveness of Blood is an unusual tale for an American filmmaker to tell. It deals with blood feuds in Albania, a tradition that allows a family to avenge the killing of a relative by murdering one of the perpetrator's relatives. Marston, who previously wrote and directed the well-received 2004 film Maria Full of Grace, had no particular ties to Albania, but he read about blood feuds and decided to learn more about the country and make a film about a young boy who becomes a target after his father is involved in a killing. Marston spent time in Albania and went to great lengths to make the film authentically Albanian. Forgiveness of Blood was shot on location using locals as actors, and the film is entirely in Albanian. Marston even picked up a working knowledge of the language himself. Motion Picture Academy rules allow each country to submit just one film for Oscar consideration, and the Albanian Film Commission picked Forgiveness of Blood. But the movie wasn't Albanian enough for Johnson's committee, which decided the film was ineligible because Marston, the writer and director, is American. In fact, he's from L.A. and went to NYU Film School. When, in our debate, Stephen Galloway challenged the Academy's decision as unfair, Johnson was reticent about what motivated the disqualification.
We can go over each one of these titles, and I can tell you why it wasn't submitted or why, in particular, in Josh Marsden's case, why we deemed it not Albanian. But it's very political, and there's no point in going into that. No.
Even though Albania did deem it Albanian.
I can't say. I heard from the Albanian committee to the contrary, and it's not nearly as cut and dry as it as it seems.
When Joshua Marston heard our show, he emailed me to express his dismay. So we invited him to tell his side of the story.
It's very frustrating to hear Mark Johnson say that. I mean, Mark and I have had a long conversation about it, and I'm not quite sure why he would say exactly what he just said. Maybe it was just in the spur of the moment. But he knows perfectly well, I think, that the Albanian Selection Committee, which is composed of members who are certified by the Academy, were very eager to submit the film. They not only deemed it Albanian, they voted overwhelmingly to submit the film as their entry. And the people who deemed it not Albanian were Americans, not Albanians. It seems to me that truthfully, candidly, if he's really honest, the main reason why it happened is because there was an Albanian who didn't deem it my film Albanian. That person was not on the film committee, though. That person was another director who stood to gain by my being excluded. And indeed, when my film was disqualified, his film was then submitted in my place. What's interesting to me and very frustrating is that the middle category of what determines the nationality of a film, that is to say the nationality of six chief crew members, that film wouldn't have passed muster in that category either. Half of his crew was from Greece. And what we kept trying to explain to the Academy is that in Albania, there simply isn't enough of a film industry that anyone, whether you're an American director or an Albanian director, or in his case, an Albanian director residing in Greece, that you could have a cinematographer and a production designer and an editor and a sound mixer and a costume person all from Albania. They simply don't exist. And so it doesn't make sense for the Academy to impose its standards of nationality on this country, and it makes more sense, rather, to trust the local film committee.
So just to be clear, it seems that Albania's committee got together. They said, Josh's film is the one. Forgiven us of blood. That's our choice. It comes here, and this committee that Mark Johnson runs said, you know, I'm sorry, that's not really Albanian.
Well, and the reason why they said that, the reason why they stopped and analyzed it, is because they received a letter from this other director.
This one director. Well, so Mark, yeah, I mean, in that clip that we just listened to, he sounds a little bit like, yeah, you know, it's complicated. Let's not go into it. Is that simply, in your opinion, just saying, you know, we kind of probably shouldn't have listened to this guy, so let's not go into it?
No, to me, it to me, it's disingenuous. I mean, to me, it's what it's doing is it's skirting the fact that the rules have been applied differently in different cases. And that the biggest inconsistency is that the Academy CM, Mark Johnson, seems to be okay with a situation where there may be a difference between the nationality of the film's director and the nationality of where the film is made. For example, a Finnish director making a movie in France or an Irish director making a movie in former Yugoslavia. But if it happens to be an American director, then they're very, very sensitive to it. I mean, part of me can understand why, because obviously all the other categories of the Oscars are available to American filmmakers. But it's an inconsistency. And honestly, what I want to say most clearly is that for me, I really was very philosophical when the film was disqualified, because I'm not Albanian. I know that. And I didn't go to Albania in order to get an Oscar nomination. What's aggravating and disappointing and frustrating for me is to see the level of outrage and disappointment and disheartening among the Albanian film community, who are proud to now have a movie that they feel can compete on an international stage. It's a movie that has broken box office records in Albania, and they feel treats a very important subject matter that is fundamentally Albanian, and yet they're told by some people in Los Angeles, no, you're wrong, this doesn't count.
You're listening to The Business, and we're talking with filmmaker Joshua Marston, whose new movie, Forgiveness of Blood, opens in New York and Los Angeles this weekend and elsewhere in coming weeks. Marston shot his film in Albania with local actors, and Albania chose the film as its submission for Best Foreign Language Oscar. But the Academy deemed the film ineligible because it wasn't Albanian enough. I asked Marston if he had run into the same issue with his previous film, Maria Full of Grace, about a drug mule from Colombia. We should note that the star of that film, Catalina Sandina Moreno, was nominated as Best Actress for her performance, but the film wasn't in the race for Best Foreign Language Movie.
It went through a similar process. Columbia wanted to submit it, and some, I think it was submitted and then also disqualified, or some phone calls were preemptively made to test the waters. I mean, I never really got involved in that because I think everyone from the outset knew that it was a little bit of a long shot. And to be very honest, half the film is shot in the United States. All of the supporting roles in that second half of the film are actors who reside in the United States. And the story is about being in the United States. So there's an American aspect to it, and there's all American crew on the second half of the film. So, you know, I don't think that Colombians really felt so outraged and disappointed when that film was deemed not eligible. It's more the fact that here with Forgiveness of Blood, you have a film that was shot entirely in Albania, in the Albanian language, with an Albanian cast about an Albanian problem, that is to say blood feuds, and as much Albanian crew as humanly possible, and yet it's deemed not Albanian. I mean, that to me, I think that's the frustration.
I'm just wondering why no one from Albania didn't appeal to the Academy and say, hey, why, that's not right.
We discussed it. It's interesting that you should bring that up. And I think in Mark Johnson's defense, I think that's maybe why the Academy doesn't fully understand the situation. You know, I got on the phone with the head of the film committee 36 hours after they found out that it had been disqualified. And they had already very quickly reassembled to vote to nominate another film. And the committee had, I heard, said to the head of the film commission, no, we already voted once. We're not going to do this again. We oppose this. And he said to them, if you don't vote for another movie, we're going to give up our slot. We won't be able to even, you know, be represented at all. And so they, under duress, they decided to submit this other movie. And all of this had happened very quickly. And it was about the next day that I finally got on the phone with the head of the film commission. And he relayed all this to me. And I said, well, have you said this to Mark Johnson? Have you expressed this frustration? And he said, well, no, I guess I maybe, you know, I should write a letter. I said, yeah, I think you should. But what was clear was that a country like Albania, this guy, they're intimidated.
They're
it's very intimidated.
Fear of blood feud.
Well, they're intimidated by, you know, being on the phone with Mark Johnson, who is a big Hollywood producer who's got a very long list of credits, and he's dealing with who's, in their minds, the head of the Oscars. They're new to the game. They don't want to be, you know,
they don't want to annoy him.
They don't want to annoy him. They don't want to upset the apple cart. They want him, you know, and that's the particular personality of that guy who at the moment is the head of the film commission. And, you know, Mark Johnson didn't hear that very, very strong sentiment. But I guess what I have said to Mark is that it's precisely because of the difficulty and the absolute impossibility of perfect communication between a film committee in some place like Albania and the Academy, that the Academy cannot and never will be able to know the nuances and intricacies of the internal politics of all of these countries' film communities. And so for that reason, the Academy should not be in the business of adjudicating the nationality of a movie. End of story for me.
Joshua Marsden is a writer-director. His latest film is Forgiveness of Blood. It opens in New York and L.A. February 24th and expands to other cities after that. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Coming up after a short break, producing the Spirit Awards, lining up Seth Rogen as your host, getting raw food for Woody Harrelson, and praying for blue skies. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. Hey, podcast listeners, this week you'll find something different in your iTunes folder. It's an hour-long awards special that I'm co-hosting with Elvis Mitchell from The Treatment. We talk about the awards season and banter about what the Oscars and Indie Spirit Awards mean to the nominees and the business. I don't want you to think I'm cheating on John Horn, ladies and gentlemen. It's just a temporary flirtation. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Awards season finally comes to an end this weekend with the Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday, followed by the Oscars on Sunday. The contenders, as well as publicists and journalists, will all breathe a huge sigh of relief when the final envelope is ripped open. And so will the producers who have labored for months to organize the shows. Today we get a behind-the-scenes look at preparing for the big day. Our producer, Darby Maloney, asked the folks at Film Independent, the nonprofit that puts on the Spirit Awards, if she could tag along as they planned Indie Film's big event.
The Spirit Awards is a different kind of award show. It happens under a tent, in a parking lot, at the beach. And it's not an evening affair. In fact, it's a luncheon. But given that Jameson Irish Whiskey is a premier sponsor of the event, there's a lot of booze.
We're handing people alcohol as they walk on the carpet. You know, they get out of their cars, we take their keys, and we hand them a drink.
That's Diana Zahn's story. She's been the executive producer of the Spirit Awards for 16 out of the last 18 shows.
I hire the host, figure out who the presenters are going to be, figure out the flow of the show itself, and, you know, if we're going to have any musical acts or if we're going to do video, clip packages, all that kind of stuff. So what you see on television is pretty much what I do.
Meanwhile, another producer, Sean Davis, is in charge of nearly everything else that happens at the Spirit Awards.
So I pretty much, I build the site. So this takes place in a parking lot in Santa Monica, and we build a structure, a huge structure, about 140 by 210 feet. So my responsibility is to make sure, working with the city of Santa Monica, working with Classic Party Rentals, who sets up our structure and all of our ancillary tents, all of our sponsor tents, our kitchen tents. So we pretty much take an empty parking lot on the beach and fill it.
It's the filling it part that makes for the biggest line item in the Spirit Awards budget. By doing the event in a parking lot, they're basically having to construct a venue where there is none. So think about it. They have to bring in the tent, the stage, the lights, the sound, the astroturf that covers the floor, all the tables, chairs, linens, flowers, pretty much everything you need to make for a comfortable setting for this 1,438-person event, including 8 bathrooms, or as they're called, comfort stations.
But these are literally like if you were to walk into a nice restroom at your friend's house. You know, they're designed, they're wallpapered, they have music, they're air-conditioned and heated. They have attendants that are there to help as necessary.
Now, the Spirit Awards isn't just an award show and a luncheon. It is the biggest fundraiser for the nonprofit organization Film Independent. With that money, they are able to do many things like have filmmakers' labs and run their Project Involve program, which is designed to enhance diversity among filmmakers. So this is a big deal. They want people to come. They want people to buy tables. They want people to have a good time and to come back next year. And they want good sponsors to come on board and help them pay for it all. And some of the premier sponsors actually build their own tents. This year, Audi will build a bungalow with an open bar. Jameson Irish Whiskey will build a green room with a DJ, pool table, and lounge area. And Piaget will build a garden lounge with a grand piano.
From what I understand, they're flying these roses from another country. They have these thousands of roses they're building these walls with.
So on the plus side, being in a parking lot enables them to build basically whatever they want. But having an award show under tents at a beach in February is a high-risk endeavor.
Except for snow, we've had pretty much every kind of weather imaginable down on that beach. We've had, you know, literally like water spouts and floods and rain and, I mean, tents being blown down, like it's just crazy.
Last year, the night before the show, they had hurricane winds and rain.
You know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, we were vacuuming out 4 inches of water in the main tent. And so, I mean, that's what you deal with when you work in a tent on the beach in February, you know, but at the same time, it's the beach, you know, so it's the beach lends a personality to the show.
That personality that producer Sean Davis is describing could be characterized as unpredictable and irreverent. It's a tone that the producers of the Spirit Awards try to strike early on with their choice of host. People like Joel McHale, Eddie Izzard, John Waters, Sarah Silverman.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Film Independent Spirit Awards, coming to you live from a tent. I don't want to say anything, but the porn awards were in a building. Okay.
And Rainn Wilson have hosted in the past.
Greetings, indie weirdos. My name is Rain Wilson, and for those of you who are unfamiliar with my work, I star on a little show called The Office. Oh, no, 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 no. The Office is on television. A television is the device in your living room that all of you pretend not to watch. The television, or TV, is popular with middle Americans. Now, middle Americans are the people that live in that vast stretch of land between here and New York, decide who the president is, eat carbs, and don't understand your movies.
This year, executive producer Diana Zahn Story chose Seth Rogen.
And this year, I saw Seth Rogen at an event for Barbara Streisand. And he came up on stage, and he was something had happened right beforehand, and he did like a three-minute riff on something else that had just happened on stage that had everybody almost peeing in their pants. It was so great. And then he was just, when he was standing on stage, he was like talking to the people like he was talking to his friends and telling these stories about Barbara Streisand. And I was like, that's it. He's the guy.
And the unpredictability doesn't stop at the host. The Spirit Awards will never play off a winner for giving an acceptance speech, no matter how long or tangential.
There are times when you're like, you want them off the stage. But then you have wonderful moments like Mickey Rourke, you know, in 2009, who won and was there for 5 minutes and gave one of the best acceptance speeches ever.
You know me about my dog that died 6 days ago. Loki. This is for you, baby. And I just got done talking to the Santa Monica Police Department. They gave me a bed to sleep in 10 years ago. And I thanked them for, I asked them for two pillows. They told me to f*** off. But anyway, thank you, Darren Aronofsky, for believing in me.
Over the last month, the producers of the Spirit Awards have booked presenters and musical acts, finalized the set design, and chosen a caterer. No detail is too small. And because this is an intimate event, they consider everyone's specific food needs, like the fact that Woody Harrelson, a nominee this year, only eats raw food.
And, you know, we know to look for Woody Harrelson that everything he eats has to be raw. Last year we had one of our nominees' sons, who was 16, who was so allergic to nuts, we couldn't have nuts within two tables vicinity. So if they have special requests, then those come in pretty quickly.
Now, with only a week to go, they're on site building everything, writing, and prepping for a full rehearsal the day before the event. But Diana also finds herself on the phone trying to resolve a last-minute problem. As of this taping, the filmmakers and stars of The Artist will not be at the Spirit Awards, and they're considered to be front-runners in a number of categories. The night before the event, they'll be in Paris at the Césars, France's version of the Oscars.
So they are literally the night before our show, and so we're working on trying to get them here. We're working with some sponsors and with the distributor and a whole bunch of people to try and get a private plane to actually, because there are no flights that leave Paris that gets them here in time to do our show. Don't know, have any idea actually what's going to happen, but, you know, if the trend continues that's been happening at the other award shows, then we could have a number of categories where the winner is not there, and that would be a bummer.
You can watch what happens at the Spirit Awards on IFC Saturday night at 10 p.m. For The Business, this is Darby Maloney.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Taryn Olson. To make a comment, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can stream or podcast the show. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Don't forget to keep up with us on our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. My handle is @KimMasters, and Darby Maloney's is @DarbyKCRW. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.